the thing that I think unites all of us as human beings is struggle. And hardships or cliffs are just opportunities to discover how resilient we really are. The best way to get me to do something is tell me I can't do it, because I want to prove to you that I can.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with really interesting people that are going to teach us how to be tougher and stronger and better runners and possibly even better human beings.
Today, we talk about comebacks, and regardless whether your comeback is one like Hillary Allen, who we speak to today, or our own personal comebacks, we all are overcoming something. So we'll be able to put ourselves in her shoes and come back.
Native deodorant. When you know, Don, when it comes to personal hygiene, who has time to read all of those ingredients on the label on the back of the bottle? Some of those ingredients, I don't even know how to pronounce, much less know what they are.
Well, you shouldn't be rubbing that stuff on your body, Scott. And if you haven't tried Native deodorant, here's what you need to know. It's aluminum-free. It offers 24 hours odor protection. It's vegan and cruelty-free and is made from naturally derived ingredients. And you can choose from over 10 scents.
I had a little bit of a hurdle when I first started with Native. I was a little nervous to go from antiperspirants to deodorants. Let me tell you, it was an easy hurdle to jump. I jumped the hurdle, and I've been using Native deodorants now for probably 2 years. They have 15,000 five-star reviews on their website.
But they don't only make deodorant, Scott. While you're on that website, look at their body wash and shampoo and conditioner.
Smell and feel fresh all day long with Native. Get 20% off your first order by going to nativedeo.com/TRN or use the promo code TRN at checkout.
Our next partner, it has a product that I use literally every day. You know what that is, Scott? It's Athletic Greens.
We've both been using Athletic Greens for probably about a year now. What makes it different than all those other green drinks you've taken, Don?
Why, Scott? It tastes great, and there are over 75 different high-quality vitamins and minerals, probiotics. There's a list of items there, and that's why it makes me feel so good.
Everybody takes multivitamins, Don, and there's so many out there. AG1 makes it simple. All you do is take one scoop, mix it in water, down it in the morning, and you're covered.
And don't take Scott and I's word for it. There are 7,000 five-star reviews used by professional athletes and trusted leading health experts like Tim Ferriss.
And here's how you can get started. Go to athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation and you get 1 free year of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. That's athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman, and we're here today with our incredible, amazing guest, Hillary Allen. In 2014, she's a Sky running champion. In 2017, she goes and runs a 50K, and that's where the story begins. Hillary, tell us your story.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. Really excited to be here. Yeah, my career as an ultra runner Harley hasn't been that straightforward. I mean, I got on the scene and, you know, found this knack for trail running, something that I absolutely loved. But as Don mentioned, I was the 2014 Sky Running champion for the United States. And this is a style of running that it's like very steep and technical trail running. And so, you know, in a typical 50K, you climb a minimum of 11,000, sometimes up to 14,000 feet. And then you have to run down that as well. So it's really steep and it has this type of running. It's like, you know, running that's like third or fourth class where you're basically putting down an appendage. Like third class would be 2 feet and an arm to stabilize yourself. Fourth class is kind of like using all fours to kind of navigate your way through the terrain. But it's a style of running that I loved. And after that 2014 season, I decided what better place to do more sky running than in Europe, because the mountains are steeper than typically in the United States. And so that was kind of the beginning of my ultra running career. And I, you know, hopped on the world racing scene. And quickly as I raced there, I had this goal to be the number one sky runner in the world. And 2015, I was fifth. 2016, I was third. And 2017, that season, I was actually ranked number one in the world. I was having an incredible season. But a lot of us have many moments that are kind of, you know, your life is different after a certain time. Sometimes it's a job change or a move or, you know, a change in, you know, having a family. But for me, it was this one race in Norway, a place that I always wanted to go. And in 2017, it was kind of just an icing on the cake. I only had two more races left in the season. I wanted to race this race called the Tromso Sky Race. It was a race that Killian Jornet and Emily Forsberg directed and designed. And it's just, it's skyrunning at its finest. And there's this, you know, one moment during the race, I remember it was about halfway when I was climbing up this Humperrocken Ridge, this iconic ridge that you can see, you know, off in the distance from the city of Tromso. And I remember recognizing people like photographers. I'm a very happy racer. So I was smiling through the pain, scrambling my way around on this ridgeline, trying to move as fast as I could. And I remember rounding this one corner and 1 minute I was running and the next I was airborne. And it was just this one moment that completely changed the trajectory of my running career, the trajectory of my life. And from that moment forward, I am a different person. So that one step, I ended up falling 150 feet off of this ridgeline, tomahawking and hitting the ground, you know, five or six times as I quite vividly remember the feeling and the moment of realization that this was it, that, you know, I heard my own voice in my head saying, you're going to die. This is it. As I remember the world slowing down and I remember not this feeling of pain as I impacted the mountain, but the sensation as if, you know, someone was kicking me in the chest or I could feel my bones breaking. And it's still a dream that I have quite vividly today. And that was kind of the moment for me that just changed everything. Before this point, I had never broken any bones. And after this point, I think I broke a total of, oh man, I forget the exact number. Five ribs, both wrists. I twisted my ankle severely. I broke my back in two places and I was cut all over. I had hundreds of stitches.
So you're laying down there. Did somebody see you? Were you able to? How did you get rescued?
As I mentioned, the falling part, I still remember very vividly. But it was after that moment is when I came to and I stopped falling. That's when the pain really came into just vivid, you know, reality. And I just, the world was pulsing. And I just remember kind of familiar faces coming, some face that was like really close to mine. I remember seeing Killian Jornet, but actually this man, Manu, he was a racer that I had kind of made friends with during the race. I would pass him on the uphills. He'd pass me on the downhills. So at this particular point, I was ahead of him and he saw me fall. And thankfully he was trained in kind of mountain search and rescue. That's part of his job. And so he didn't even hesitate. He just scrambled down to come get me. And that's when kind of the whole rescue team was called and the rescue operation was initiated. But I mean, there's so many fortunate parts to this. Like it happened during a race, there are people around. But in Norway, it's notoriously, you know, unstable environment due to rain and weather. And thankfully, it was a clear day. So you could actually get a helicopter to come rescue me. Someone could see me and see where I fell. And yeah, it was, you know, an intense rescue operation, getting raised into a helicopter and then hoisted up and taken to the hospital.
Hillary, as I'm picturing this, you must have hit your head. There must have been some concussions or massive bleeding in the head. And did you have that happen to you as well?
This is another fortunate part. I mean, I didn't fracture my skull and I have no idea how that is possible. I mean, my head is uneven now because honestly, there's pictures of me in the hospital and I wore my hair in a braid as I normally do for racing. And my hair was so caked in blood that they couldn't undo my hair. So they just had to like shave parts of my head to kind of get at the cuts to stitch it up. And there's like still parts that are uneven. I have like a pretty big scar on my forehead. So I definitely did hit my head, but I think like my hands and wrists were very mangled. So I think like I was protecting myself when I fell, but I miraculously didn't have internal bleeding.
Wow.
Which I, again, don't know how is possible. But the thing is with that is I definitely did have a concussion. I mean, I don't remember the first 2 days in the hospital. I don't remember the races on a Saturday. I don't even think I remembered reality until Tuesday, like actually realizing that I was in the hospital bed injured until Tuesday. And that's like when I remember having some more operations and my mother came to visit me from the United States.
So the doctors came in and informed you what was going on. What was your prognosis? What did they tell you? And what were your thoughts about how I'm going to reach my goal to be the number one in the world as a sky racer?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't really think people knew. I think everyone was just astounded that I had survived. And like I said, I had never broken a bone before. And I literally only had one limb to walk on. And my ankles were so severely twisted that it was even painful. So I was in a wheelchair for the first couple weeks until, you know, I came back to the United States. It was an ordeal to get me back home. You know, the healthcare system in Norway was incredible, right? Like I was able to stay in the hospital, but they didn't really have the specialty people that I needed in order to answer those questions about returning to sport. And 2 weeks later, I returned back to the United States in a wheelchair, not able to walk, arrived on a Monday, was in the doctor's office on a Tuesday, was told that I had to have 3 more operations in the next 2 days.
Wow.
Or else my mobility was going to be more severely compromised than it already was. And that's when I found out like the more severity of the situation. 2 surgeries were on my wrists because I had like an external fixation where there's like wires and things hanging out of one of them because my left arm was more severely broken and my right arm was just like splinted. But they needed to reoperate on both of them or else I was not going to regain full function of my wrists. And then the one that was really a gut wrencher was my foot. Both of my feet were broken. My ankles were twisted. But they missed this diagnosis of a Lisfranc injury, which was, it's basically the integrity of your arch. So pretty important part of your foot and essential for walking and running. It's the spring of your foot, basically. And they needed to operate because it was already 2 weeks had passed and it was, you know, had begun to heal improperly. And so that was where the doctor was very frank with me. And she said, look, this is a foot changing injury. Like you're going to be lucky if you can jog recreationally again. Like you need to seriously consider that your elite racing career is over. You know, I appreciated her candor and that she was so honest with me. But I remember my first, I was just numb. I didn't really know what to think. But I did think that I also had a choice, you know, that it's like, okay, we're going to do the surgery. Like I want the best option and the best chance of me being able to run again. But I don't think this is it for me. You know, I talked about that one moment or that one step literally for me that changed everything. But this was another pivotal moment, you know, where everyone talks about, you know, surviving this accident. But my story, I think, began when, like, of the survival after all of that. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it continues even to today because I've had to rethink how I train, how I live, how I, you know, view reality and, you know, life itself, honestly.
I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, Hillary. You've gone through this traumatic event, multiple surgeries, and then you have an expert in the body, a doctor, someone in a lab coat that is telling you, you know what, you're going to be lucky to walk and maybe recreational jog. Obviously devastating, but how do you go from that expert telling you what your limitations will be to saying, no, I disagree. I have a choice here. And I mean, I'm trying to see how did you make that leap from what the expert is telling you and what you wanted?
And if I can jump in there and remind the listeners that she has a master's degree in neuroscience and physiology and structural biology. So she knows a little something about rehab, about the body, and she's being delivered information that she can process through her own filter. So to answer Scott's question, what's next?
So, you know, it's not... I would like to say that it was like this instantaneous transformation, but it was definitely more of like a slow reckoning and understanding of what was happening. Again, using my logic, scientific brain, like my matter of fact self, which is a huge part of me. Sometimes I can be a little bit too blunt and honest, but I knew that my body was going to heal. I knew the timeline for ligament repair. It's about, 6 months to a year. And so 6 months I was going to have a surgery again to remove the screws. And but it's also kind of a black box because if there's screws in your body, you can't do imaging because it's a big magnet. So it creates this artifact where you can't actually see if ligament healing happens. So I was dealing with all of this stuff in my brain, logically thinking through like, okay, bone healing is about 6 to 8 weeks. Like that seems pretty straightforward. Like this isn't going to be forever. It's kind of a pain in the ass, How am I going to shower with, one leg and I have to put like bags on everything else. I can't lift more than a Coke can with my hand. So how am I going to like wash my hair, stuff like that. So I had to get really comfortable being naked around strangers and having chaperones constantly. But, that kind of occupied my mind in the immediate future, right? I was just trying to get through one day at a time and make baby steps towards recovery, towards literally the smallest steps of being able to get to the coffee shop down the street by myself. Then finally, when my casts were able to come off of my wrists, that was progress. And then it wasn't until 3 months later that I could actually start to bear weight on my right foot. And so it was very slow that like once I started to see that, okay, my body is healing, I'm able to do these small things. I think really the first time that I remember the thought came into my mind that like, oh, like maybe I can do this again and really start to believe it was when I started doing jumps in the gym. And I remember I was so scared and I think I got maybe like an inch off the ground. But like once I did that, I was like, okay, like I can do this. And it was in combination with these like mantras of almost like tricking myself into, I wrote this thing down like literally 2 weeks or 3 weeks after I had the accident, that believe your best athletic days are ahead of you. And wow. I would say that to myself and write it down every day. And most days it honestly felt like a lie because I had no idea how I was going to go from not walking to, running and trying to run, long distance in ultras again. Like I thought that that might be gone, but I told myself that I've got to believe to like give myself some sort of, reason to get out of bed and keep going and do these boring, mundane PT exercises. And the more I did it, the more I started believing it. And really in combination with that, the biggest thing for me was, this is going to sound silly, but I had to let go of being an elite athlete ever again. Mm-hmm. Like I had to let go of wanting to be that. I had to be okay with, what if I could only recreationally jog again? What if I could never run ultras? Well, I'm still going to believe that my best athletic days are ahead of me because I don't know what that looks like. I can make new athletic goals. I can maybe discover a new sport, which I did. Maybe my goals would change to running a different type of, distance or backpacking or something like this. Like, but I still had to believe that my best athletic days were ahead of me and to be discovered, regardless if I was an elite athlete again.
Was that a light switch decision that you made that things are going to be okay and I'm going to run again? Or was this a process?
It was the most painful process ever because I was holding on to who I was before the accident. I wanted to be her again so badly, that, I wish that the accident literally would have killed me because it seemed so much easier. Because
wow,
every moment after surviving the accident was like the hardest day of my life. And navigating this whole new reality that, you know, my future wasn't, you know, guaranteed. And of course, your future is never guaranteed, but it just felt, life felt even just exponentially more fragile. And so I was holding on to that for 6 months, a year. And finally, I think it was something that my coach said, and it corresponded to the first race that I did after my accident, which was not that long. It was actually only like 10 months after my accident that I did my first vertical kilometer race and a sky race, because of course I wanted my first race back to be a sky race. and you know, my coach was just like, Hill, like, rip off the Band-Aid. It doesn't matter if you're elite again. Like, you are so lucky to be alive. You have worked so hard to get back to moving and doing what you love. Like, that's what matters. And that's why you run. You don't run for a medal. You don't run for other people. You run for yourself. Mm. And as soon as I did that, I just felt like this liberation that I've never felt before, even before I fell off that cliff, that I could just, you know, go out there and do a race. And it didn't matter if I came in last or first, because, you know, it honestly, you can't hold on to those accomplishments and achievements anyways, because they're fleeting. But you right. can hold on to like that process that gets you there.
Hillary wrote a book called Out and Back, A Runner's Story of Survival Against All Odds. And I imagine that you learned a lot about the process by writing it down. What did you learn from writing that book as you processed a lot of this information?
Well, a lot. And actually, it's like, I think I missed a lot of things. But really, who's going to relate to a story of like, I fell off a 150-foot cliff and now I'm running again. You can too. Like, does that mean that people have to like fall off a cliff? Like, no. But like, we're talking like, you know, Scott said that everyone has their, you know, their metaphorical cliff. Everyone has something that they're struggling with. I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, it could be, you know, maybe someone got divorced or a change in relationship, like you're starting a family. It's like these huge things that happen in your life that feel like huge obstacles or just big changes in your life. Like, that's how you relate. The thing that I think unites all of us as human beings is struggle. And the thing that unites all of us is that we're all resilient. And I think every human is so much more resilient than they give themselves credit for. And hardships or cliffs are just opportunities to discover how resilient we really are. And the irony of me writing this book was that 18 months after I fell off that cliff, I was finally starting to feel strong again. I decided to put together a racing calendar. I was going to do some ultras, some distances that I'd never done before. And I break my ankle.
Oh, and
no. On the ice, 4 blocks from my house. After I finished a trail run. And I remember crumbling to the ground, hearing that pop, knowing exactly what happened, and, you know, trying to walk, looking at my ankle, being like, well, this isn't going to work. And called my PT. Then I called my doctor, and I was just crying on the side of the road, like ugly tears, and just saying, like, I don't know if I could do this again. And it was that, you know, after I kind of, you know, dried my tears, you figured out what was happening, knew I was going to have surgery. It was another, I knew I was going to have to learn how to walk again and run again. And that's when I really decided that, all right, like, let's find out what you're made of again. And again, this is an opportunity. It sucks. It's awful. But like, let's use those skills that you used last time to really figure out what strength looks like and how resilient you can be. And that was the beginning of writing this book. And really my hope with all of it was giving a voice to people who are struggling, when I think we live in this world where people are too afraid to show the ugly bits of recovery, especially as professional athletes. We're normally told to just like go in your hole, don't tell us about the struggle, and then come back when you're winning again. And that wasn't realistic for me. I needed to put words to how awful I felt and how hard it was to come back. And I think you can't really show someone how resilient they can be unless you show them the muck that you went through. And my words, at least what I hope they are, is kind of that conversation for anyone who's reading it, you know, and kind of an example that they can figure out how strong and resilient they are through their own hardships.
Hillary, I know you have some higher degrees, and one of them is not psychology. But I'm
Does it show, Scott? Well, why would you say that?
No. But this is what I'm thinking here is, why do you suppose that we're so afraid to show that vulnerability, or to show the struggle, or to show the comeback and the work and the pain and the tears? We only want to share the rainbows and unicorns with a snapshot on Instagram. When, in fact, you mentioned it, we all have this common thing as humans, which is struggle. We all will struggle at some point, but I think we all relate and like to hear about those stories because it reinforces the resiliency of the human character or the human spirit. Mm-hmm. Why do you suppose we hide that?
It empowers us.
Yeah. I mean, so I've given so much thought to this because I'm a completely different person now than I was before because I was afraid. And sometimes that is still scary. I mean, I can't be completely vulnerable with everyone because I think that's a bit naive. But in fact, I have chosen to be pretty vulnerable with anyone because I can't press delete on the pages of a book. It's out there for people to read. You know, they can find some pretty intimate details about me. And that's something that I've chosen to do. And I think that it's a different kind of strength. I think we value so much of these external factors of success, right? One of the common things that we ask each other, how are you doing, right? Instead of how are you being, right? Ooh. Our self-worth is almost defined by how much we do in a day and how much we accomplish. And, you know, I've certainly gone into that. I've gone into that even, you know, post-accident. But I have to, you know, I have to remember that, you know, we're more than just our accomplishments. We're, you know, who we are deep down inside really matters. But that's also really hard to show because you have to, in order to be vulnerable, you have to be completely honest with yourself. And I think when you do that, it can be kind of a scary place because, you know, maybe you're not so put together. I mean, I'm certainly not put together, but I mean, that's also with, you know, self-compassion and all of these things that are really, really hard to do. It's something that I think can happen. It's a process. It's not like an achievement or like an end point, right? It's a continuum throughout your whole life. But I think we're so focused on the outward because we're so afraid to really look inward and slow down and experience emotions like sadness or, you know, loneliness. I mean, I think American culture and consumerism and like the whole like negative side of being an athlete and posting these like snapshots on, you know, Instagram, it's like we're in this consumer culture where we just want to consume instead of like really checking in and slowing down and figuring out how we are just as we are, mm-hmm. without anything, you know, to hold on to. And honestly, the more I did that, the more honest I was and open and vulnerable, I found that there's strength in that and accepting help and, you know, really being honest with myself first and how I'm feeling. But it's very uncomfortable. Not everyone could handle it. Not everyone could be around me. You know, especially the ultimate test was, you know, telling someone like my mother that I wish the accident would have killed me because yeah. that's how I felt. And it was just so strong because it just seemed like an easier avenue than what I was going through because life just seemed unbearable. And being that vulnerable with someone and instead of her, you know, saying like, oh, don't say that, like you shouldn't experience it. And this is awful. Like, don't say that. She was like, okay, like, you know, I understand, like, this is really hard. Like, you know, maybe it would make her cry or upset, but she wasn't trying to change my experience. And, you know, I think it's definitely uncomfortable, but I think this is a cliche, but I think the things that are the most uncomfortable are really worth doing.
A lot of ultra runners are very independent. And I get the sense by just knowing you for the short time that we've known you, that you seem like a very independent person. Tell us about how you finally realized that you needed help. I know you had two broken wrists and you needed to help shampooing your hair, but how did you finally let that happen?
You know, I think independent can also be like a euphemism for stubborn. I'm just kidding. I'm extremely independent. I mean, I'm the youngest, and I think my mom, she was expecting me to be maybe behave a little bit differently because I've always been very independent and not like the baby of the family in any way. But it's hard because it's not in me. Like, the best way to get me to do something is tell me I can't do it, because I want to prove to you that I can. And, you know, I always want to do something myself because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. You know, I want to get the most out of myself. I want to do the best that I can. I'm a very driven person. And I would always associate accepting help with weakness. Mm. And, you know, that, oh, if I can't do it myself, then like, why do I need help? Right. And so, you know, there's been many, failed relationships, like romantically on this front, because I'm just like, no, like what is this team thing? I'm just going to do it. Like, I don't need this. Like, I just want to go, you know, I just want to do this myself. Like, you know, cause I thought it was associated with weakness. But when I learned that, and I was kind of forced in this situation where I needed to accept help, I was very resistant to it. And at first it was easier to do it, you know, with my family, just because you're comfortable with them. But then, you know, I learned that, you know, it was a form of love for them to be able to help me. And then for me accepting their help, it was also a form of love towards them, but then also for myself. And throughout all of this, I think it's been such a learning experience for me to realize how important community is. And of course you can't accomplish everything by yourself. You need a team. We're stronger together. And it's helped me to lean more into relationships, you know, with my coach, with my family. You know, it's completely changed those relationships where I would like maybe keep them at bay because I was afraid to kind of share my struggles. And I was afraid to like really truly trust someone, you know, in my weakest moments and to let them see me that way. And the cool thing is I learned a lot about myself. But then upon accepting help and growing that community, I've, you know, created some of the best friends that, you know, I never would have thought I would have had. One of which is, obviously I mentioned my coach, but, you know, my physical therapist and, you know, that gym, that community, just feeling, you know, this kinship through these relationships where people have helped you literally get back on your feet again.
Inside Tracker is where you can find out more about what's going on your insides to make you a healthier, more productive athlete.
We learned about Inside Tracker from Patrick Regan and the success that he found by learning what his blood was saying and trying to tell him. People get their blood sampled all the time, Scott, but do they know what to do with it?
I think that's the big difference. Besides the whole process, they take that report and translate it into an action plan. They tell you what your baseline is and what you need to do better. And here's the thing that I like. Every night I get a ping on my cell phone that allows me to be accountable to the goals that I've set.
When you do what you love, like running, racing, and enjoying the great outdoors, you want to do it for life, and Inside Tracker can help you get that done. We have a future episode coming up where we discuss the 5 biomarkers that every endurance athlete should know.
That's going to be a fun one. I'm looking forward to that. And here's what you can do to take advantage of this great resource that Don and I have. For a limited time, you can get 20% off your entire Inside Tracker store if you go to insidetracker.com/TRN. If you don't have a pin with you, if you're not at a web browser right now, go to trailrunnernation.com, click on the deals page, and you can get it from there.
Let's get back to the story and let's set the scene. It's 2019, 18 months after your fall, and you're sitting on the curb, tears rolling down your face. Tell us what's next.
Well, so I had to back up. So 2017, fall off that cliff. Then, like, you know, I'm saying 2018, I'm actually that summer, I'm back to running. And I actually do, I told you about that sky race that I did, my first race back about 10 months. That was like end of June. And then the very next week, I actually was scheduled to be in Italy to do a speaker series, and I ended up doing one of my favorite races. It's called the Cortina Trail 50K in Cortina, Italy. And I actually ended up winning that race.
Wow.
And I had the course record the year, like in 2016, and I was only like maybe 5 minutes off my course record. And then I did a few other just kind of things. I think in actually 2018, then I went to the Endurance Challenge 50 miler. This was in like kind of the later fall, and ended up winning that in, I forget, maybe 12 hours or 13 hours or something. And then that kind of goes into early 2019 where I break my ankle. And so then this is in February, I have that surgery. And I'm already signed up for this race, TDS, Tour de Duc de Savoie. It's a 145-kilometer race in the Alps. It's like UTMB's like ugly stepchild. It's actually like, in my opinion, a harder race than UTMB. But it's just, it's like more technical. And but it's a race that I wanted to do and I'd never raced that distance. But even with breaking my ankle in February, I never took my name off of the start list. And so leading up to that race, I was really diligent with my running and my PT, and I got back to running. I went back to Cortina. I won the 50K again. Wow. And then I went to TDS, and I actually placed second in the longest race ever in my ultra running career. And I was only 10 minutes away from the first place woman. We were battling it out all day. It was like one of the best races that I've, well, to that date, like one of my best races. And then to top the year off, I went back to the endurance race in Chile later that year and ended up winning and setting a course record at that 80K race in Chile.
Wow.
Hillary, did you pay your surgeons a little under the table to maybe shorten the ligaments or make them a little bit stronger so that you had more bouncing? I'm thinking there must have been some kind of tomfoolery going on with your surgeons there.
Oh man, I wish. But like, honestly, the secret that I have is that there's no secret. There's really no substitute for hard work. I was working my butt off. And even those times, like when I wasn't able to weight bear, you know those Airdyne machines that CrossFitters use? It's like you use the arms and then like your legs go and there's like a fan in the bike. Yeah. I would literally prop my leg up on one on a trash can and I would pedal with the other leg and I would use my hands. And I was in the gym like every day and doing mundane PT exercises using like this blood flow restriction on my, you know, broken ankle leg just to try to, you know, help it heal. It's like I wasn't sitting around and doing nothing. Of course, I was waiting for it to heal, but I was doing everything in my power to get back to doing something that I loved because I still believed that my best athletic days were ahead of me. And, you know, the story isn't over because then in 2021, last year, around this time, I broke my foot.
Oh, no.
These are things that are all related to because my gait has changed. You know, like I was running, unfortunately, in a pair of shoes that were not working for me. And unfortunately, it was a little bit too little too late that they actually caused this foot break. But it was such a severe foot break, and I have a high pain tolerance that I didn't know I was running on a broken foot. And I ended up having to have surgery. And now there's a plate in my foot. And this was in April that I had the surgery in 2021, right when my book was being published. Literally 2 days after my book came out, I was in surgery. And I was not able to walk for 5 weeks. And even last year, I thought it was all over. I thought that like, there's no way I can come back. What am I supposed to do? Learn how to walk and run for the third time again? Like, how am I going to do this? But I embraced cycling, which is something I love so much. I was in the gym working super hard in PT. And I went back to this race, which was ironically on the island of Madeira in Portugal. This race that I had been at the Sky Race. It was the last Sky Race that I had won before falling off this cliff in 2017. I went back to Madeira and decided to do not the Sky Race, but the 115-kilometer race across the entire island of Madeira. And I ended up winning that race.
Wow.
And I think I got chills when I crossed the finish line because I think at that moment, I finally understood why I had been writing down that mantra that believe your best athletic days are ahead of you. And I truly do believe that anything is possible and that, you know, Madeira is not the end. It's just the compilation of 4.5 years of relentless hard work and believing in myself throughout many peaks and valleys and numerous injuries and continuing to bet on myself every day, even when the odds are stacked against me.
Wow. Hillary, you know, as you're painting this picture with these vivid colors and I'm trying to understand and visualize in your daily training, you know, you mentioned how dedicated you were and driven. Were there any days that you just thought, it's not worth it. I'm going to take a day off. Or did that even enter your mind?
Oh, yeah. You know, I constantly question why I do this. And, you know, there's a chapter in my book, What's Your Why? And for me, why I run, why I want to, and I have to back up because I've never defined myself as just a runner. I've always defined myself as an athlete. Mm. And I think that has liberated me in a sense, especially through my recovery, because now I've embraced, like, I love strength training in the gym and I love riding my bike. I'm not just a runner. I'm an athlete and I'm trying to be the best athlete I can be. And for me, my why is why I want to keep on pushing myself to be an athlete for, you know, the rest of my days, is because it makes me a better person. And that's what I want to do in this life, is I want to live every day and try to be the best version of myself I can be. And movement is part of that. And that's what helps me to show up and be the best version of myself for myself, but then also for everyone else around me.
I have a question for you. There isn't a step that you would take that didn't have some joint that was repaired. And I've got to think. And as I'm running, I'm trying to think of managing myself, managing the way the joints feel. And I would have a problem, with trying to push away some of these incidents that happened. I would say, well, I'm weak because of this, or I shouldn't push this too hard, or boy, that foot doesn't feel like it should now that it's been repaired. How did you process some of these changed structural biomechanics that you were dealt with on each and every training event?
You know, it's something that I still struggle with today. Like, sometimes I get really frustrated. And so there was, of course, like, I mean, I guess, Scott, to answer your previous question acutely, is like, absolutely, there are days where I was like, I don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Like, I don't want to keep going. But, you know, there's just something in me that was pushing me to do something. And sometimes that is resting, right? Like, listening to your body and resting. And they have a coach to help me with that, because I'm not that good at it. But, you know, I still sometimes get really frustrated because my body's not the same as it was. It's not the same as everyone who's I'm competing against on the start line, you know, and that can make me feel like I'm at a disadvantage. But I also have this hyper awareness of my body. And so I'm trying, you know, I have to do a lot more mobility and PT to be healthy and just kind of have to train differently. And I think that makes me a better athlete in general. You know, I'm not someone who can run 100 miles a week healthy. And that's okay, but it's taken me a long time to accept that. But there are still days where it's hard, where I'm running outside and there's snow and it just, like, one of my ankles, it works differently than the from the left to the right. And that can be frustrating if I focus on that too much, but I try to focus on what I can do and what I can do to, you know, stay healthy and to kind of give my body the needed lubrication that it needs sometimes. But it can be discouraging. And I think for me, I just have to acknowledge it, but I also have to not let that hold me back and to live in fear, because that can, you know, be a prison. It can hold me back, and it's not a place that I want to be.
I think we can all learn something from your mindset, because I think that's just fantastic approach. And I didn't ask that question to get inside of your head, but to learn what's inside your head, because we can all use a little bit of that. So thank you.
I mean, it's not something that, and I think it is evolving, because, like I said, I think this, it's a common question I've asked, is like, oh, you know, do you wish that it didn't happen? And like, of course I wish that this accident didn't happen. But at the same time, you know, like, I can't change it. There's a reality to it. But I'm also thankful, because I've learned so, so much. And, you know, it's allowed me to kind of break through to this next level and have more self-compassion and, you know, understanding about, you know, the fragility of life, but also how beautiful it is and how much power, you know, we all possess if we're just, you know, willing to endure a little bit of struggle to uncover it.
Hillary, that is such a great point. That is a golden nugget I am going to remember. Focus on the things that you can do and not on the things that you can't.
Your story has taught all of us something. As we listen to it, we're inspired by it, and we can see a little piece of our challenges, maybe inside of your catastrophic challenge that you've gone through. But you know who else learned something, and I think is probably different because of you, and that's your original doctor, who said you're lucky to be a recreational jogger. I imagine they look at every case a little bit different and with a little bit more encouragement, not false encouragement, but I imagine that doctor looks at all patients through different eyes as a result of the experience with you.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I hope so. But I also think everyone asks me, they're like, oh, well, are you mad at her for saying this? And I really, maybe in the moment I wanted to punch her in the face, but like I couldn't because I had broken wrists. So that would have been hard.
Right.
But I really appreciated her being so honest with me. And I think maybe she's learned a lot of, you know, something from me through other patients, because I think she was very impressed, like when I went back with her and, you know, with my progress and my determination. But I learned so much from her. And I think the best thing is to be honest with yourself. And that's, you know, with your experiences that you're having, your emotions, but then also with honest with the people that you love and that you care about, because at the end of the day, I mean, it's not helping anyone if you're going to be dishonest with them. So as much as she hopefully learned from me, I learned from her as well. And, you know, I refuse to to live my life in a dishonest manner.
Do you think having your education in structural biology and the understanding of physiology that you have, do you think that helped you as you're recovering? What if you didn't have that education? Would you have accepted defeat and said, you know what, my doctor knows so much and I know so little, I guess I'm done?
No. You know, I think in some ways it kind of hurt me because I'm sometimes I can be a little bit like untrusting because I'm just like, well, I read this and like, you know, I understand science just as much as you. Maybe I don't have an MD, but like, you know, I have a different scientific degree. So I could be a little bit too pragmatic and be like, well, why isn't my recovery linear? Because I love things when they're black and white, right and wrong. Like there's a clear answer. There's not a clear answer. That's part of the reason why I love chemistry and not biology. Because, you know, in biology, there's a bunch of this hand waving bullshit that you don't really know what some process is happening, but you know it happens because, you know, it's a biochemical process. But in chemistry, you have like these clear A plus B equals C. And like, it's also why I love math. You know, what recovery taught me is that, you know, it's not, you know, that it's recovery is not linear. And so I think, honestly, if I didn't have the scientific background, maybe I'd have a little bit more self-compassion earlier on. But, you know, it has also taught me, this is also why, I mean, you said I don't have a degree in psychology, but it's a huge passion of mine now. This like, this big black box of what it is, what mental health is, and, you know, the psychological effects of injury in an athlete and what it means to be a full person, you know, not understanding the structural mechanism of, you know, neurons firing, but what the human condition really is. And, you know, it's kind of the softness, and it's not, life is not black and white. It's actually more gray than anything. And it's a mix and a blend. And yeah, I think honestly, if I didn't have the scientific background, maybe I would have accepted that sooner.
Hillary, what's ahead for you now? We're now in 2022, heading into the spring, the snow's starting to melt where you are. What's ahead on your training calendar, on your race calendar, or in other athletic pursuits?
It's a great question. You know, ice season is upon us, so I'm terrified. but I have actually a really early season race, a pretty early season race for me, the earliest one I've ever had. On April 2nd, the Gorge Waterfall 100K. Dylan Bowman, a good friend of mine and ex-teammate of mine, and he's going to be like the race director for this race. So I wanted to go there and support him, do something that, you know, is outside of my wheelhouse. It's a very runnable race. It has 10 or 11,000 feet of climbing in 100K. So
it's flat. It's flat is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. So we'll see how I do. And then, you know, the really cool thing is that all of my work on the bike, I'm now on the Pinarello gravel bike team as an ambassador. So I get to do some really cool gravel bike races, like Unbound 200. That was my first ever bike race, a 200-mile bike race in Emporia, Kansas. On all gravel roads, I get to do that again, as well as some other cool bike races, gravel bike races I've never done. I'm doing San Juan Solstice. It's a 50-mile race here in Colorado, a bucket list race of mine, and UTMB. So I've got a pretty exciting year full of adventures and races, and yeah.
We need to rewind just a little bit. Gravel bike racing. I'm familiar with road bike. I'm familiar with mountain bike. Yeah. Don even has an e-bike. I don't know what a gravel bike is. What the heck is that?
Well, so gravel bike is basically like a road bike. It's like a drop bar road bike, but you put fatter tires on it. So you can encounter a little bit more terrain. Nice. I highly recommend it.
Well, I highly recommend going out and getting your book, Out and Back, A Runner's Story of Survival Against All Odds, because your story is incredible, and I would love to turn page by page and get more into it and learn more from it. You also have a TED Talk out there, and I ran across that in preparation for our other podcast and was fascinated, and you caught me completely in the first 2 minutes. You just telling your story, and I finished watching it. It was very good. So I encourage others to go out and look for that too.
Thank you.
Hillary, how do you become a TED Talk speaker? Did they reach out to you, or do you like send in a resume?
They were having like a TEDxCU I live in Boulder, Colorado, and they have kind of different chapters. And so they had one at CU, and I just applied and I got an audition, and then they chose me.
Interesting. It's very good. We'll make sure that we link that. Also, go to Hillary Allen. That's Allen, Allen.com, where you can find more about her books and her coaching. She's learned a few things about herself that she can transfer to you. And so she has a coaching service that may be a right fit for you. So go to HillaryAllen.com.
Hillary, thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us your story and making us better for listening.
Aw, thanks so much, guys. It was awesome to chat with you both.
Now go out and mountain bike and gravel bike and run.
Mas.
Woohoo! You can gravel bike on a mountain bike trail. It's not a technical.
This is the time when we give thanks to a lot of people that support us. We want to thank our producer and editor, Ryan Warr.
We also give thanks to Yana Gibalova. She's our social media guru.
And Katie Burke is behind the scenes working on her website and doing graphics and support. Boy, she is talented.
Well, I've noticed. I think we've raised the bar a little bit with all this help, Scott. It used to be just you and I.
We want to thank especially our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley at Crumley & Associates. You can find him at DougCrumleyJr.com. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. We also want to thank our Patreon supporters. One of the features that Don and I wanted to do when we first started the Patreon is how we could give back and make it a valuable investment for you. Last quarter, we gave all of our Patreon supporters a $25 gift card to UCAN. They were able to get $25 worth of UCAN.
Regardless of what level you come in at Patreon, we're working hard, and every quarter we'd like to give back to you. This quarter was Path Projects.
Yeah, Path Projects, one of our longtime partners. We were able to work out a deal, and they sent every Patreon member a $25 gift card. We hope to continue this every quarter throughout this year. So if you want to participate, if you want to try some of these great products that Don and I are always yakking about on the podcast, go to our Patreon page, give what you can, join at every level, and you can enjoy some of these paybacks as well.